God, growth, and getting paid. Why do so many spiritual people struggle with money? That's what we're exploring today on the Conscious Success Podcast. I'm your host, Madhu, and we're going to explore practical tips and mindset shifts that are not only going to allow you to figure out how to make money doing what you love and actually making an impact, but how to reconcile all of the negative, nasty connotations you might have learned around money in such a way as to feel very empowered in generating wealth without even an ounce of guilt. As always, if you enjoy topics like this, join our Conscious Success community at the link in the show notes so you can explore these topics with us and over 1,000 other individuals from around the world. Check this out. So jumping into this topic, it's important that you understand where I'm coming from. I lived as a monk for my 18th birthday for about 5 years. After graduating the monastery, having no possessions to my name, living in different ashrams or monasteries around the world, half the time in India, half the time in ashrams in the West, I graduated with pretty much nothing in my name, and I made about $15,000 the first year and $18,000 the next year. I was hardly making enough just to get by. From there, I was able to, through the guidance of my amazing teachers, grow our business, pretty much do it properly. Start making first six figures the first year and then multiple six the next. And we kept growing that to eventually where we created the Conscious Consulting and Marketing Agency that we run today, where we help other health and wellness experts grow a sustainable business as well. And grateful to say that we've done really, we've made some good money doing that and changed a lot of people's lives with it. It's a very unusual story to hear someone go from having no possessions. I pretty much didn't even touch money. It was almost taboo to have your own bank account. I remember when my parents insisted I had to have a bank account. So I remember I didn't want to tell anyone about it because being a monk with the bank account, even though I had maybe a few hundred dollars to my name in there that came through various seemingly strange means, I didn't even want to talk about it. So going from that to running an incredible, successful international business and frankly helping at this point, we have over 300 people we've helped either grow or create their own business. There's a way in which the number one shift that has had to happen was all here. And if you're only listening and watching, not watching, I am pointing my brain. It's all about mindset shifts. I want to offer you, first and foremost, a proper philosophical understanding. In other words, what are the values and the priorities of values that I actually want to offer you that you may want to apply into your life and make your philosophy. Once we have, say, some axioms, some common ground, then what I'd like to offer you is some practical tools that help me go from, I mean, talk about a scarcity mindset. It's like less than scarcity mindset to what one might call an abundant mindset, or really it's just seeing life for what it really is. And I want to offer you some practical ways in which I found really helpful and things that honestly I come back to on a regular basis whenever I hear those old patterns trying to keep me small coming up in my brain. In the same way as even if you're not going from having nothing as a monk, most of you hopefully aren't in that situation, but even if you were starting from scratch, these are things that can pick you up. These are practices that are going to allow you to thrive, frankly, because it's available. It's available to you. It's available to me. It's available to everyone that we know. The cool thing is we're only ever a few decisions away from completely radically changing our life. Arguably only one decision away from radically changing your life and getting all the more close to your goals, to your dreams, and the things you really deeply want in your life. I want you to pay attention to these. And it's important as we're going through these, if you haven't done any of the exercises, I suggest grab a notebook, grab a notes page on your phone, whatever you got to do, take some notes of these so you can keep them present in the mind, because your mind is going to find so many good reasons to digress from these topics. It's going to be a little uncomfortable. No problem. All you have to do is be the boss of the mind, as opposed to letting the mind be your boss, telling you what to do, and keep coming back to these, write it down, maybe read them every day until these feel second nature. So there's two primary areas I'm going to explore. Number one, I want to offer you a proper conception of divinity. When I say proper, I mean a complete conception. I'm going to, in a few minutes, maybe in the most concise philosophical treatise or short summon of sorts, I'm going to offer you a proper understanding or a whole conception of divinity that I would argue to say, if you don't already believe what I'm going to share, is going to be better than anything you've ever understood. Now, the reason we're going to start there and why are we talking about divinity in the first place? Aren't we talking about money? Yes. In order to be spiritual, aka somebody who is in touch with the spirit, spiritual, We're talking about somebody who is understanding that which is of the nature of the spirit, aka the you, the real you driving the biomechanical robot, aka human body that you're walking around in. You have a body, you're not a body. You have a mind, you are not the mind. You are something divine. You are a unit of consciousness, a self, a soul, a spirit, whatever term you want to give it. That's what you are. You have a mind, you have a body. I want to understand first and foremost, how do I reconcile this idea of what I am and my relationship with divinity? Because then we can actually be a quote unquote spiritualist. Otherwise, we're using some random concocted meaning of the term spiritual. From there, we can talk about how do I, with a proper conception of reality, or what I would offer to you is the best, most logical, full conception of reality and divinity, then what do I do to start to align my mind, align my thoughts with that conception of divinity? So let's jump in. My friends, work with me here. I'm going to be working off of some axioms and some premises that I am just going to hope that you as our listeners agree to. Everything I'm saying, I'm happy to make a whole episode, if you so desire, on each of these points to break down every little building block that gets us to, say, these particular agreements. For the sake of doing this relatively from the hip, quick and dirty, as they say, I'm going to assume that you and I are on the same page in a few aspects. Again, if you challenge any of these points, which I encourage you, challenge everything I say, make a note of that and send us a note and say, hey, make an episode on this so that we can break it down. Work with me here as we're moving through this because we're going to go quickly. So number one, when we're talking about reality, there's at least two things we can conceive to be true. Let's just talk about philosophy. If we're talking about philosophy, we're talking about there's this idea that you are a self. How do I know that? Is because the fact that you can even ask yourself the question, am I conscious, indicates that you're a conscious entity. So there's one factor of reality, and that's that you know you're a something. You're an entity. You are alive. You know you are conscious because you can even ask yourself, am I conscious? Interestingly enough, you don't know if anyone else is conscious for certainty. You can't hold it to any stringent testing. You can simply take their word for it in the same way as you know you're conscious. Somebody says, hey, I'm also conscious. You might then be able to extract and say, all right, I'll believe you. So one thing you do know is that you are conscious. We can also see in reality, there's matter around us. There is that which is not animated. There is matter which is inanimate. It is not imbued with life. There is that which is imbued with life, aka consciousness, and there is that which is not. These are two very objective agreements that everyone can perceive. And again, you don't even know if everyone else is conscious, but you're going to have to take their word for it. But you do know you are, and you can see that there's that around you which is not. When you have a brick in your hand, you can understand that this brick is not conscious. It is matter that comes into being and out of being. We can also see the body that we're temporarily in comes into being and out of being. It changes second to second. Every single cell in our body is changing. If you go up to the mirror, you close your eyes, by the time you open your eyes again, believe it or not, the cells on your face have changed. So we can understand that there's matter which changes, but there's something that doesn't change. The real you, the self that is residing within that matter of the body. These two factors of reality is what I would say is philosophy. And we can extrapolate from that all types of philosophies in the world are trying to give definitions and understanding of those two things, how related they are, defining what they are, trying to understand what they are. I'm going to introduce a third factor, which takes a philosophy to what we might call a theology. Where do both those things come from in the first place? Because my friends, there's certainly a higher power. If you don't believe me, go spend a little time in the sun, maybe spend 10 hours in the sun. Tell me there's no power higher than you. Good freaking luck. Go swim in the ocean for long enough. Tell me there's no powers higher than you. Certainly anyone with a brain can understand that there's so many powers higher than us. We can then understand if we can perceive that there's hierarchical powers higher as well as lower, there are entities and beings that are not as powerful as you are. We can see the hierarchy going down as well as up. We can understand that means logically there's a highest of all high powers. What we're talking about here is that divine source. And I'm going to give you some ways in which you could perceive and understand divinity. The reason we have to bring in this third element is otherwise the other two just don't make sense. Where does consciousness come from? Where does matter come from? It's somewhat ambiguous because otherwise we can understand matter has a beginning and end. Therefore, there has to be some source. Consciousness, however, which does not have a beginning and an end. It's eternal. We're going to touch on that in a second. It's eternal. That in itself is fine, but matter, there needs to be some further explanation to it. The most logical explanation I'll offer to you is that everything comes from something, because that's, if you say nothing comes from something, you just simply don't know how to talk English good. That just doesn't make any grammatical sense. Everything must come from something. Something cannot come from nothing. It literally makes no sense. What we're talking about here is, what is that source where consciousness and matter come from? Once we have a general understanding of that, then we talk about what is the best, logical, most understandable version or understanding of divinity. What's the best conception of divinity? So having the agreement that we are conscious, we can therefore extrapolate others are conscious, there's certainly matter around us that we can perceive that comes and goes. And then we're trying to understand the source of that, which we might call divinity. What the heck is the best version of divinity? Is that some old man with a big white beard in the sky just ready to smite someone for making a decision? That, my friends, is what we call a shitty version or conception of divinity. What the heck does that even mean? Some person in the sky was sitting on a cloud. It's so ambiguous. It makes no sense. I want to talk about, what can I start to understand about divinity, which makes, again, when I say makes the most sense, even the nature of divinity is, if your mind can fully concept divinity, then that means divinity is not beyond it. So there are going to be some steps, as I'll introduce here, which we call translogical. There are certain things about divinity, that anything greater than you, that you're not going to be able to fully understand. However, we can understand enough of what is in our conceivable capacity. And then the parts that we can understand, there are some things that I'm not going to be able to understand fully, like eternity. We might be able to have some understanding, like, okay, I have the idea of eternity, like the self within that I've been perceiving my mind and body throughout my life. I can see that never changed. Like, they're me perceiving the mind and body, that's never changed. So I have some general understanding of eternity, but ultimately, because you're bound by matter, which is transient in nature, has a beginning and end, there's going to be parts that you could say, fully understanding eternality, it's inconceivable. It's beyond full conceptions, beyond full logic. It's translogical. But what are the things that we can fully conceive of, fully understand, and then everything else that's beyond it, we say, okay, what then makes the most sense of what I can understand, so as to be willing to accept something that is, say, translogical, that fits within that paradigm. Let's talk about what that looks like. If you've ever considered having a podcast, especially if you're expert at what you do, I cannot suggest more highly using Podigy's service, which is what we use. If you like this production here, I highly suggest you reach out to Podigy through their contact in the show notes below to run and host your podcast. I went through a bunch of different teams, tried a bunch of different things. No one came close to what I got post-production from Podigy, and even just making a launch easy, taking your content, sharing it, making it presentable. Please check out Podigy. If you're great at what you do and you've ever considered having a podcast, I really am excited for you to try them out as well. So first off, if we're looking at theologians around the world, there's a few things that are really easy for us to agree on that are axiomatic, that become... almost undeniable factors of divinity. Number one being all powerful. Again, we're talking about the highest of all high powers, which means omnipotent or the most powerful is simply just another definition of the highest power. So first off, we can understand that the divine entity, the divine potency, well, it's an entity, we'll get there in a second, but divineness must be the highest of all high powers. Another exception, and what we're talking about here is what we call triple OG, omniscient, omnibenevolent, and omnipotent. What that means is all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-loving. So all-powerful, that one's easy. That one's just pretty straightforward. And inevitable factor of an entity, and I'm just, work with me here if you're like, why are we saying entity? We're going to talk about that more clarity here in just a second. But the idea is, let's just talk about an entity that is all powerful, must also be all knowing. Must also, one aspect of being all powerful is being all knowing. So whether you take that as a byproduct of the idea of full knowingness, or excuse me, full potency, or whether you consider it as a separate version, is the highest conception divinity all powerful? Certainly. Is it also all-knowing? It must be. How could someone, some entity that is all-knowing, or excuse me, all-powerful, not be all-knowing? You start getting into really rough territory. So it must be omnipotent and omniscient. Then you also have another factor, which is all-loving. Can you conceive of a version that's all-powerful, all-knowing, but not all-loving? Yes, you can. The problem is, if you believe in a divine source that's all-powerful, all-knowing, but isn't all-loving, isn't fully compassionate, you now just pretty much have a royal dictatorship. Is the highest version of divinity really a royal dictatorship? Of course it's not. You must then also have an all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful version. So this is called the triple O conception of divinity. This, again, I'm happy to break down each of these points and work in the premises to why we would accept these, but work with me here. If you want a different episode, like I said, just let us know. We'll go into that. Assuming that the highest version of divinity you can conceive of is all powerful, all knowing, and all loving, what must that divinity be like? So that's that you must accept this foundation for what we're exploring here. When we're talking then about all-loving and all-powerful, could an all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving entity provide you exactly what you need, all-knowing, provide, which means all-powerful, in a way that will actually help you and improve your life? All-compassionate, all-loving, yes, certainly. And that's actually the reality. That's what we're living day to day is there is an all-loving, all-knowing, all-powerful source that knows exactly what we need, wants to give it to us because all-loving, and is capable of giving it to us, all-powerful. Now we get to understand, all right, what is the nature of this triple OG, of this all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful divine source? What we're talking about here, first and foremost, is we have to define intimate versus formal love. Is formal love more potent, more powerful than intimate love? That's a very tough argument to try to say so. We can understand from take your boss, take your teachers, take your whatever the case might be. And if I were to say, you know, I want you to treat them the same way you treat your spouse or your really close friends, you'd be like, how dare you? I would never transgress. There's a type of awe and reverence that comes with a formal love that's just not as available as an intimate love. So again, all-knowing, all-powerful, all-loving, deity, form, source, would want to create a reality where the highest love is available, aka that means intimate love is greater than formal love. So we're now talking about an intimate love with divinity. Now, can you love something that which is not like you? Yes and no. Just like I can say, I love my computer. I love my books. I love my whatever it might be. Sure, you can say, I love squirrels. I love squirrels. You know what I love is cows. I really love cows. One can make the argument that one might say you can only love a sentient living entity. I might say, I love my glass of water, but it's a different kind of love than loving a sentient entity, than loving a cow. And even loving a cow is different than loving a human. It's a limited capacity because you can't fully relate with a cow. Doesn't mean you can't love them. I just am saying that from a logical perspective, you can understand that the love between two humans is always going to be more, let's say, stronger than it would be with any other type of sentient living entity. What to speak of matter, which isn't even sentient. That's why in other languages, you have different words, one that describes intimate or conjugal love, another word that talks about formal love, another one that talks about friendly love, or another one that talks about loving an object. In English, we just have the word love, and that's fine. You can use other words, adore, etc. What we're talking about here with love is you can ultimately only love something that which is like you, which you can understand, which means a human. You can ultimately only love a human more than you could love anything else. Therefore, rather than making the misidentification that God is anthropomorphic, God must then be like you, because you're the center of the universe, right? Wrong. God is not like you. We are theomorphic. That means we are like God, because an all good, all loving, all powerful deity would want to create at least one species who have this beautiful prefrontal cortex with the ability to have, say, recursive language, which means I could say, what I'm doing and how I did it and where I went and who I did it with. I can have this recursive language. I can have the ability to reason through my prefrontal cortex, unlike any other living entity in the world, which is what makes us the apex predator, even though we have this soft little skin and like really weak jaws. Why are we still considered apex? It's because we have this cool brain, these functions of the brain that other living entities don't. So an all good, all loving, all powerful deity would make at least one species capable of being like divinity. So as in the same way as just like you could love a cow. I love cows, but not like I love a human. Therefore, when we're talking about intimate love, I can only intimately love something that's like me, another human or human-like. Therefore, we are godlike. The human form of life is so special. My gosh, if you look at the living entities in the world, if you were to count all the many, whatever, trillions, gazillions, I don't even know what the term is to give how many innumerable living entities just in this one tiny little world, what to speak of in the endless cosmos, and all the life forms available everywhere. It's just inconceivable when you're talking about only 8 billion humans. Like, wow. Talk about winning the lottery. What a blessing. Bigger blessing than maybe most of us give it attention to. So we must understand that we are now talking about a human-like, or let's say human-like, and not in a way that's like you, because you're actually divine-like, but that divine form, which is a person, because you're going to love a person. You can't love, I love this notepad. It's limited. You must be loving a person, and it's an intimate kind of love. And then we can even get into the really granular details of a divine conception, even beyond this, of having a personal, loving, intimate relationship with divinity, who's all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful, to, you know, what would that version of divinity be spending time in corporate cities? No, be spending time in a pastoral, nature-based reality, which is just how the nature around us pre-civilization and even during civilization, that which is beauty and beautiful and provides growth. I mean, there's all these other, let's say, additional, more beautiful and more clear understandings of divinity that we can get into. But creating, say, a foundation for what we're talking about here, it's important that we have this realistic perspective that there is a highest power who must also be all-knowing and all-loving. Otherwise, we're now talking about something other than God. And that version of divinity, the highest of high powers, must be a person. It must be human-like, or I am like divinity. And there must be an intimate version of love available with them. That, my friends, is the most simple version of the highest divine conception I believe you'll be able to come up with. Now, by all means, I am eagerly searching day in, day out for something. If there's something more beautiful and full and complete, by all means, the door is open. Let me know. I am so excited to hear if you can come up with something better than that. Good luck. There's a reason this philosophy has been around for a very, very long time. Now that we have a, let's say, understanding, that means you as a unit of consciousness, who's eternal, go beyond this body. I mean, you can understand from practical standpoints that you're not the body. Again, if you lose an arm, you're not less of a person. You can see that you have a body that's changing moment to moment. So if I'm in a body that's changing moment to moment, then what's the alternative to an eternal reality? What, you come into being temporarily and go out of being? Like, good luck. The burden of proof is on you to prove that. Whereas you actually have experience, even though the mind and body changes, the real you perceiving all that to happen doesn't. It's witnessing the whole time. That's why you can go back to when you're 5, 10, 15, whatever it might be, and remember what you perceived. Even times of you looking at the mind with the different thoughts of the mind and changing your mind, because you're not just the mind. It's not just a composite of thoughts. So understanding you as a unit of consciousness have an eternal, intimate, divine relationship with a personal version of divinity. We can now start to look at resources. And one of those resources we're talking about is money. How do I reconcile this idea about money? How do I be spiritual and wealthy? In order to have a proper conception of this, or at least let's say one that's reconcilable, one that you can explain without just saying, it just feels right. It also has to feel right, but it's got to make sense. You got to have both. We want to look at this idea that would an all good, all loving and all knowing version of divinity, which really just is divinity, create a world with limited resources? Or would OOG create a world with access to unlimited resources? Certainly the latter. Certainly an unlimited source can create unlimited resources. Therefore, in this world, not only is there no shortage of resources, money being one of them. Even if you were to take all the gold in the world, lock it in a safe and put it at the bottom of the ocean, it's not an insane idea. It means it's possible that the next day, more gold, more other precious metals or commodities can be found in the earth that very same day. These things are possible. And therefore, there's no limit to resources. At the same time, resources retain value no matter what. If I gave you a $5 bill, is to say, I really want the shirt that you're wearing. I say, here's a five. Well, nowadays, here's a 30, whatever. I mean, now shirts are a lot more than that. Whatever. I think this is $80 shirt. If I say, here's 80 bucks, and I say, 80 bucks, give me your shirt. I'd make it optional. I wouldn't force you. And then you then get to take that $80, and let's say you go down the street and you see a microphone that you like. You want to get a mic? Then you trade that $80 for a microphone. And the person who you trade the $80 for the microphone for wants to go get a guitar and then goes to the music shop and gives $80. And then this $80 continues to create value. The value itself holds. Now, even if you want to go beyond money, which is inflation, I'm not going to get into that now. That's another episode. But let's just say you take something that does hold value. You have a silver coin. That silver coin, every time you give the silver coin for someone else, it holds value, it exchanges value. Therefore, it's not like the more money I spend, the more it's gone. No, the more money I spend, the more I'm putting in circulation to the economy. So not only are there endless possibility of access to resources, there's no limit to resources that are possible, but all those resources retain value. Which means the more money, the more resources you have, the more you put into circulation, the more you create and accumulate, not only are you not taking that from others, you are now giving more opportunities for value to go around. So with that understanding in mind, we can then ask ourselves, how then can I start to create a life where I get to do what I want and be financially reciprocated? Now, don't get me wrong. You might be in a situation in life, you're like, it's okay. I don't mind my job. It's not the most ideal situation ever, but like, it's fine. It works. And then I'm going to do my spiritual practice and my dharma, my purpose, the things that excite me on the side. No problem. No sweat. However, it's important to acknowledge that you can do that and still be financially rewarded. In order to have the proper mindset and perspective on that, we can look to this idea that an all good, all loving, all powerful source not only can create all possible options to get me as many resources as I need. Because why wouldn't an all good, all loving source want to do that, but knows how to, according to my mind, according to what's necessary, according to what's going to help me in my growth. And ultimately, when we're talking about growth, that means towards transcendence. How do I live in such a world, in such a way as to move past conditioning? And if you're not familiar with that, check out some of our other episodes on the mindset and really trying to create a proper understanding of self. But with the idea that I know there's a version of reality, I can do what I want and make money doing it. And there's no limited resources. And the more resources I have, the more I can actually contribute and give. The most, what I would say, essential realization or perspective that's going to come out of that is that you are the driver of your ship. You're the one with agency, with free will. And that means that you create your future and your destiny based off the decisions you make today. And therefore, if you are making decisions, aka learning how to become financially literate, learning everything from how to make money and how to generate clients, or how do you sell your products or whatever the case might be, how to invest, spending time from an educational perspective or actually learning the behaviors that people who have money and build wealth do and doing those, all of that's fully in your control. That means, my friends, whatever financial status you are in today, whatever resources you have handy, you've created that. We're never a victim at any given time because nothing happens randomly. If we're understanding that the triple O source, omniscient, that means if God is all loving, all knowing, and all powerful, which again, give me a better definition of God. God must be that. Then we can understand that God's providing us experiences all day, every day, that are actually for our betterment. Because if it was all good, of course, everything that's happening would be for our goodness, for our betterment, for our ultimate growth. Therefore, nothing happens randomly and things, shitty things happen. I get it, but nothing that we don't ultimately deserve. This is why victim mentality is just the quickest and easiest way to be miserable and suffer and not have the life that you want, because you're taking your agency away. You're pretending like you're not in control of the situation, giving your control to others. But rather, if we understand the reality that everything that's happening is happening because I need this to happen for my growth based off of what I've done in this life, past lives. It's another conversation as well for another time. If you don't believe in reincarnation, oh God, I got some YouTube videos for you. Then explain to me why you have hundreds of people born in different places around the world and at the ripe age of 4, being able to tell you everything about their last life, where they were born, and all that stuff gets checked out. It's crazy. Anyway, reincarnation is for sure there. Although the burden of truth is, give me a better alternative to reincarnation, I'm open to considering it. All that's to say, in this life or another, we've done something that we've had to learn what to or what not to do. That's what karma is. Cosmic rehabilitation system. Therefore, everything that's happening is actually ultimately in our control. And that means everything I do right now, decisions I make right now, are creating my future. Everything is happening to me, the good, bad, and the ugly, is ultimately for my betterment. Things are not happening to me. Things are happening for me. And that means if I want more resources, now that I know that there's unlimited resources, and the more I have, the more I can help and contribute others' life with, my job is to start to, first and foremost, put myself around people who are doing the things that I want, who have the resources I want, the experiences I want, but learn from an educational perspective, how do I do that? And once I learn how to do that, you do it. Learn what to do, do it, surround yourself by the people doing it. It's really that simple, and it's just a matter of time till you get what you want. So you, my friend, are in control of your life, as am I, and as everyone around you knows. And to the extent that you don't accept that or don't follow that, you will suffer. There's no version of reality where if you give away control of your feelings to others, where you're going to feel great and empowered. The only way to feel empowered, the only way to feel, I mean, honestly, the only way to perceive reality for what it is accept full accountability for your life, full responsibility for your life, and understand everything is happening for you, for your betterment. It's simply an opportunity for you to be the best version of yourself, to learn what you need to learn, to move in a version of, in the direction of transcendence. So I know I told you that would be a lot. Pause, go listen to that whole spiel over and over until it becomes second nature for you. Now that we understand this idea that you're in control, our job is to figure out, what is it that I really want? Knowing that sky is the limit, knowing that I have the greatest resource on my side, divinity, who can give me everything I want, need, and more, and ultimately will give me the things that are going to serve me for my betterment. What do I want to do with it? Because I have free will, I have agency. And ultimately, it's up to me what decisions I make, what thoughts I think, what words I say, what actions I take. By the way, if you're wondering, wait a second, Madhu, did you say God's omniscient, but we also have free will? Sometimes people get really fancy with this. It's a very simple point to reconcile. If God is omniscient, which again, the highest conception of divinity means divinity must be omniscient. That means divinity understands all versions of potential outcomes that could happen. Doesn't mean what will happen, because you with absolute certainty have free will. Otherwise, I mean, it's a very silly argument for people who say predestination, that you have no free will and no decision to, you have no ability to make decisions on your own. It's silly. It's very unverifiable. So rather, we can understand just obviously I have free will. I make my decisions. You know, I walked left instead of right today, and therefore X, Y, Z happened. Certainly, free will must exist in order for us to have that loving relationship with divinity. Because again, the only thing divinity doesn't have is our intimate love. That's the only thing divinity doesn't have. That's actually the whole purpose of life, is reconnecting with our intimate relationship with divinity, so as to give divinity the only thing it doesn't have, which is control over you. Because you, as a conscious entity that's always existed alongside with divinity, has the option to turn towards or away from divinity. And the cool thing is, love can only be given. You can't force someone to love you. If you didn't have any free will, there'd be no love to give. You would just be like a slave servant. Yikes. And all good, all loving, all powerful source of existence wouldn't create a reality where everyone's just a slave servant. No, creates a reality where we all have free will, which means we get to choose what we want to do. And does that mean do we want to choose divinity, or do we want to choose matter? Spirituality? Temporality. It's up to us. And therefore, every decision we make, divinity understands all versions that we could choose. And therefore, whatever version we choose, cool, knows how to provide us the next experience, the next perspective, the next whatever it might be, that's actually going to be for our betterment. One of those things within your choice is what you want to do with it. Do you want to make money?
Yeah.
Really? Do you really want
to? Well, you know, I guess I'm fine here. I'm not suffering that bad. I'll just keep suffering.
Cool, no problem. If you don't really want it, why would divinity give it to you? And if you really do want it, the cool thing is, even if you want things you don't, that aren't going to actually serve you, divinity will provide them to you in a way that'll make you not even want them anymore. Because that's just what an all good, all loving, all powerful source of existence would do. But if you do want resources, if you do want to make a bigger impact, and frankly, resources help with that, then by all means, go for it and understand that you will be met with all opportunities to have the full life you want, have as many resources as you want. All you have to do is choose that and accept that reality. Because the thing is, your mind's going to believe whatever you put in it anyway. So better you pick the story that you want to exist, because your mind's going to find evidence for whatever you put into it and believe anyway. So better believe the thing that makes the most sense. And this, my friends, is what I offer you as the very short way to understand, maybe one of the shortest versions of theology you've ever heard, in such a way as to have a proper grounded understanding of not only you and yourself as a unit conscious and your relationship with divinity and your relationship with matter, but in such a way as to give yourself full agency, or like accept the reality that you have full agency to do whatever you need to do and put yourself in control to create the reality that you want, make the decisions you want, which really means accept the beliefs that actually serve you, that make the most sense, start to have the thoughts and feelings that are actually in alignment with those highest beliefs, that value system, and then start to speak and act in a way as to make those beliefs a reality. Let's say your reality. And then from there, the results will come. The fruits will come just from watering those seeds. This, my friends, is the how we can start to not only understand God in a proper perspective, growth in a proper perspective, but also how you can get paid doing what you want to do and changing the lives of so many. As always, if you enjoy topics like this, join our Conscious Success community, where we do this all day, every day with people probably just like you. As always, we can't wait to see you on the next section, where we get to dive deeper and deeper into topics like this. If there's anything that you are keen to exploring that you want us to touch on, go to our ourconsciousSuccessPodcast.com, or go to our Conscious Success community, where you know where to find us. Go to the show notes and let us know what topics you want to hear more of. I'm here to serve you and all the guests we bring on. We're here exclusively with the one purpose, and that's to make this available to you. A really beautiful thing that helps us, as well as subscribing and telling your friends about this. Subscribe, give us a review. It only takes 20 seconds, but it makes a world of a difference to us. And that's one of the only things I'll ever ask of you guys. Subscribe, let us know how we can help you, and make sure you keep showing up so that not only you can become the best version of you, but in this way you can create an example so everyone around you can know that their best life is available. See you on the next one. Keep it conscious.